Episode 7, Dracula's Victory. Van Helsing has come to London at the call of his student, Dr. Seward. As our story continues, Van Helsing and Dr. Seward are battling the forces of evil for the life of Miss Lucy Westenray.
Lucy Westenray's Diary, 12 September, 1897.
How good they all are to me. I quite love that dear Dr. Van Helsing. I wonder why he was so anxious about these flowers. He positively frightened me. He was so fierce. And yet he must have been right, for I feel comfort from them already. Somehow I do not dread being alone tonight, and I can go to sleep without fear. Such a terrible struggle I have had against sleep these last few days. The pain of the sleeplessness, or the pain of the fear of sleep, with such unknown horrors as it has for me. How blessed are some people whose lives have no fears, no dreads, to whom sleep is a blessing that comes nightly and brings nothing but sweet dreams.
Dr. Seward's Diary. Van Helsing and I arrived at the Westenray home in Hillingham at 8 o'clock. It was a lovely morning. The bright sunshine and all the fresh feeling of early autumn seemed like the completion of nature's annual work. The leaves were turning to all kinds of beautiful colors, but had not yet begun to drop from the trees. When we entered, we met Mrs. Westenray coming out of the morning room. She is always an early riser. She greeted us warmly and said,
"You will be glad to know that Lucy is better. The dear child is still asleep. I looked into her room and saw her, but did not go in, lest I should disturb her."
"Aha! I thought I had diagnosed the case. My treatment is working."
"You must not take all the credit to yourself, Doctor. Lucy's state this morning is due in part to me."
"How do you mean, madam?"
"Well, I was anxious about the dear child in the night, and went into her room. She was sleeping soundly, so soundly that even my coming did not wake her. But the room was awfully stuffy. There were a lot of those horrible, strong-smelling flowers about everywhere, and she had actually a bunch of them round her neck. I feared that the heavy odor would be too much for the dear child in her weak state, so I took them all away and opened a bit of the window to let in a little fresh air. You will be pleased with her, I'm sure."
"You removed the garlic flowers?"
"Garlic? No wonder they bore such an odor. My goodness, Professor, I fail to see your reasoning. What the poor girl needs is fresh air."
"Dear madam, the best of medicines are taken from nature's bounty, and sometimes that which is not pleasing to the senses is most healing to the body."
"Perhaps you are correct."
"In this case, I am sure of it. I must ask, therefore, that you and your staff follow my directives in all matters until we have brought the young lady back to good health."
"Well, if you insist."
"Indeed, I do."
She moved off into her boudoir, where she usually breakfasted early. As she had spoken, I watched the professor's face and saw it turn ashen gray. He had been able to retain his self-command whilst the poor lady was present, for he knew her state and how mischievous a shock would be. He actually smiled on her as he had held open the door for her to pass into her room. But the instant she had disappeared, he pulled me suddenly and forcibly into the dining room and closed the door. Then, for the first time in my life, I saw Van Helsing break down. He raised his hands over his head in a sort of mute despair, and then he beat his palms together in a helpless way. Finally, he sat down on a chair and turned to me.
"My God! My God! What have we done? What has this poor thing done that we are so sore beset? Is there fate amongst us still, sent down from the pagan world of old, that such things must be, and in such way? This poor mother, all unknowing and all for the best as she think, does such thing as lose her daughter body and soul. And we must not tell her. We must not even warn her, or she die. And then,
both die. Oh, how we are beset. How are all the powers of the devils against us?
Dr. Van Helsing, we must not surrender.
You are correct. Come, we must see and act. Devils or no devils, or all the devils at once, it matters not. We fight him all the same. Quick, to her room. Draw back the blinds. I will see to our patient.
Is she all right?
It is as I expected. The monster has come again. We must have another transfusion. No. Today, you must operate. I shall provide. You are weakened already.
As he spoke, he took off his coat and rolled up his shirt sleeve. Again the operation. Again the narcotic. Again some return of color to her ashen face and the regular breathing of healthy sleep. Before we left, Van Helsing again told Mrs. Westenray that she must not remove anything from Lucy's room without consulting him, and the flowers were of medicinal value, and that the breathing of their odor was a part of the system of cure. Having done all that could be done, we took our leave, Van Helsing returning to the Barclay Hotel, and I to the asylum. I was engaged after dinner in my study, posting up my books. Van Helsing would be arriving soon, as we were to discuss our future plans for Lucy's treatment. Suddenly, my office door burst open, and there stood Renfield in an apparent mad frenzy, and with a dinner knife in his hand.
The blood is the life.
Renfield, stand where you are.
Oh, no, Doctor. Not until we've had a bit of your blood, eh?
You've cut me.
What has happened here?
He's attacked me. It's Renfield, the patient I've spoken of.
You have spilt much blood.
And I have little enough to spare.
John, look. Your patient.
Renfield had cut me at the wrist, and the wound had bled freely for a few moments. I had just now occupied myself binding the wound, and as I returned my attention to Renfield, I was sickened by his activity. He was lying on his belly, on the floor, licking up like a dog the blood which had fallen from my wounded wrist.
The blood is the life. The blood is the life.
This is insane, beyond my comprehension.
You must brace yourself, my friend. This is but the beginning. It will require all of your strength and character to see the things which you will see and do the works which you must do in the days ahead. May I speak with your patient? He appears satiated and has calmed himself.
Do what you will. I am baffled.
Mr. Renfield?
Renfield? Answer the man.
This old man is of no interest to me.
Renfield!
No, no. It is all right. Perhaps your patient has lost interest in life eternal.
What's that you say?
Or those who live beyond the grave.
What? Who are you? How do you know these things?
You see, Mr. Renfield, I am not of this country. I come from a land of dark forests where we have ancient castles and remember the ancient ways. Do I interest you now?
I am indeed curious.
As I thought you would be.
I could see that Van Helsing had removed a crucifix from his coat pocket and was holding it behind his back out of Renfield's view. It was not large or small, about 6 inches in length, and appeared to be made of fine silver. It glistened in the lamplight.
In fact, Mr. Renfield, I have a gift for your master. Perhaps you would be so kind as to deliver it to him next you meet.
A gift? For the master? What manner of gift?
Just this. Here, take it. Why do you shudder?
You are a dangerous man.
I should hope so.
And a foolish man. You tempt his wrath, not mine. What is your name?
I am Van Helsing. What is your master's name?
The master has many names.
So says the ancient text.
Renfield fell silent and soon returned, quite calmly, to his cell. I asked Van Helsing what was the meaning of his exchange with my patient, and why did the crucifix have such a powerful influence upon him. But Van Helsing, like Renfield, would speak no more, only saying that he will explain in time.
But for now, know this. This Renfield is most important. You must keep a keen watch upon him. Record all movements, all speech. This patient of yours is a pawn, yet he may deliver the king.
Memorandum left by Lucy Weston Ray. 17 September, night.
I write this and leave it to be seen, so that no one may by any chance get into trouble through me. This is an exact record of what took place tonight. I feel I am dying of weakness and have barely strength to write, but it must be done if I die in the doing. I went to bed as usual, taking care that the flowers were placed as Dr. Van Helsing directed, and soon fell asleep. I was wakened by some flapping sound at the window. I tried to return to sleep, but could not. Then there came to me the old fear of sleep, and I determined to keep awake. Presently the door opened, and Mother came in and sat by me. Just then the flapping and buffeting came to the window again. She was startled and a little frightened. I tried to pacify her, and at last succeeded, and she lay down on the bed to rest. But I could hear her poor dear heart still beating terribly. After a while, there was the low howl again out of the shrubbery, and then the crash at the window. The wind rushed in, and in the aperture of the broken panes, there was the head of a great gray wolf. Mother cried out in affright, pointing at the wolf. Then a strange and horrible sound came from her throat, and she fell across me, clutching her heart. The room and all round seemed to spin round. I kept my eyes fixed on the window, but the wolf drew his head back, and a whole myriad of little specks seemed to come blowing in through the broken window and wheeling and circling round like diamonds of dust shimmering in the moonlight. I tried to stir, but the swirling and shimmering specks held some spell over me, and I could not move. Dear Mother's heart had ceased to beat, and now she lay dead beside me. The room seemed to be spinning madly. I managed to rise from the bed and leave my room in search of the servants. I descended to the dining room to look for them. My heart sank when I saw what had happened. They all four lay helpless on the floor, breathing heavily. What am I to do? What am I to do? I am back in the room with Mother. I cannot leave her, and I am alone, save for the sleeping servants, whom someone has drugged. Alone with the dead. I dare not go out, for I can hear the low howl of the wolf through the broken window. The air seems full of specks, floating and circling in the draught from the window, and the lights burn blue and dim. What am I to do? God shield me from harm this night. I shall hide this paper in my breast, where they shall find it when they come to lay me out. My dear mother gone. It is time that I go too. Goodbye, dear Arthur, if I should not survive this night. God keep you, and God help me.
September 18, morning. Having received an urgent dispatch from Van Helsing, I drove to Hillingham and arrived early, knocked at the front door, and received no answer. Circling the house, I found no means of ingress. As I did so, I heard the rapid pit-pat of a swiftly driven horse's feet. They stopped at the gate, and a few seconds later I met Van Helsing, running up the avenue.
Are you just arrived?
How is she? Are we too late?
Did you not get my telegram?
I only received your telegram early this morning and have not lost a minute in coming here. I've just been knocking and cannot make anyone in the house hear me.
Then I fear we are too late. God's will be done. Come. If there be no way open to get in, we must make one. Time is all in all to us now.
We went round to the back of the house, where there was a kitchen window. The professor took a small surgical saw from his case and, handing it to me, pointed to the iron bars which guarded the window. I attacked them at once and had very soon cut through three of them. Then, with a long, thin knife, we pushed back the fastening of the sashes and opened the window. I helped the professor in and followed him. There was no one in the kitchen or in the servants' rooms, which were close at hand. We tried all the rooms as we went along, and in the dining room, dimly lit by rays of light through the shutters, found four servant women lying on the floor. There was no need to think them dead, for the heavy breathing and the acrid smell of laudanum in the room left no doubt as to their condition.
We can attend to them later. We must go to Miss Lucy.
We ascended to Lucy's room. How shall I describe what we saw? On the bed lay two women, Lucy and her mother. The latter lay farthest in, and she was covered with a white sheet, the edge of which had been blown back by the draught through the broken window, showing the drawn, white face with a look of terror fixed upon it. By her side lay Lucy, with face white and still more drawn. The flowers which had been round her neck we found upon her mother's bosom, and her throat was bare, showing the two little wounds which we had noticed before, but looking horribly white and mangled.
It is not yet too late. Quick! Go get heat and fire a warm bath. This poor soul is nearly as cold as that beside her. She will need be heated before we can do anything more.
I got a bath and we carried Lucy out as she was and placed her in it. We busied ourselves chafing her limbs to bring back the circulation to her blood. Never in all my experience had I seen Van Helsing work in such deadly earnest.
You are correct, Professor. We are in a stand-up fight with death, aren't we?
If that were all, I would stop here where we are now and let her fade away into peace, for I see no light in life over her horizon. The heat is beginning to have effect. Bring my stethoscope.
It is there beside you.
It beats. The first game is ours. Check to the king.
We took Lucy into another room and laid her in bed. Van Helsing tied a soft silk handkerchief round her throat. She was still unconscious, but had regular breath.
What are we to do now? Where are we to turn for help? We must have another transfusion of blood, and that soon, or that poor girl's life won't be worth an hour's purchase. You are exhausted already. I'm exhausted, too. I fear to trust those women, even if they would have the courage to submit. What are we to do for someone who will open his veins for her?
How about some strong American blood?
Quincy! Quincy Morris! But what brought you here?
I guess art is the cause. Here's his telegram.
Let me see. Have not heard from Seward for 3 days, and am terribly anxious. Cannot leave. Father still in same condition. Send me word how Lucy is. Do not delay. Homewood.
I think I came just in the nick of time. You know, you have only to tell me what to do.
A brave man's blood is the best thing on this earth when a woman is in trouble. You're a man, and no mistake. Well, the devil may work against us for all he's worth, but God sends us men when we want them. She has blood. The American, Quincy, he rest too. Here, read this. It dropped from Lucy's breast when we carried her to the bath.
In God's name, what does it all mean? Was she or is she mad? Or what sort of horrible danger is it?
You shall know and understand it all in good time, but it will be later. As for now, we must gather our forces. This American is strong and brave. We must bring him to our cause. Also, Arthur, the lover of this poor child, must come.
Hello, John. Dr. Van Helsing.
Arthur! But your father...
Father has passed away. My place is here now. How is your condition?
Come. You shall see.
Lucy was breathing somewhat stertorously, and her face was at its worst, for the open mouth showed the pale gums. Her teeth, in the dim, uncertain light, seemed longer and sharper than they had been in the morning. In particular, by some trick of the light, the canine teeth looked more pointed than the rest. When Van Helsing saw this, I could hear the sissing indraw of his breath, and he said to me in a sharp whisper,
"Draw up the blind. I want light." My God! Come, John. Look.
The wounds on the throat have absolutely disappeared.
She's dying. It will not be long now. It will be much different. Mark me. Whether she dies conscious or in her sleep. Bring that poor boy and let him come and see the last.
Arthur, my dear old fellow. Summon all your fortitude. It will be best and easiest for her.
What do you mean?
Young man, come here to the bed.
When we came to the bed, Lucy opened her eyes and, seeing Arthur, whispered softly,
"Arthur, oh my love."
He was stooped to kiss her when Van Helsing motioned him back.
No, not yet. Hold her hand. It will comfort her more.
So Arthur took her hand and knelt beside her, and she looked her best with all the soft lines matching the angelic beauty of her eyes. Then gradually her eyes closed and she sank to sleep. For a little bit her breast heaved softly and her breath came and went like a tired child's. And then, insensibly, there came the strange change which I had noticed in the night. Her breathing grew stertorous. The mouth opened and the pale gums drawn back made the teeth look longer and sharper than ever. In a sort of sleep-waking, vague, unconscious way, she opened her eyes, which were now dull and hard at once, and said in a soft, voluptuous voice, such as I had never heard from her lips,
"Arthur? Oh, my love. I'm so glad you have come. Come here. Kiss me."
Arthur bent eagerly over to kiss her, but at that instant, Van Helsing, who, like me, had been startled by her voice, swooped upon him, and catching him by the neck with both hands, dragged him back with a fury of strength which I had never thought he could have possessed, and actually hurled him almost across the room.
"Not for your life. Not for your living soul and hers."
And he stood between them like a lion at bay. Arthur was so taken aback that he did not for a moment know what to do or say. And before any impulse of violence could seize him, he realized the place and the occasion and stood silent, waiting. I kept my eyes fixed on Lucy, as did Van Helsing, and we saw a spasm of rage flit like a shadow over her face. The sharp teeth champed together. Then her eyes closed, and she breathed heavily. Very shortly after,
She opened her eyes in all their softness and, putting out her poor thin hand, took Van Helsing's great brown one. Drawing it to her, she kissed it.
My friend. My true friend. Oh, guard him. And give me peace.
I swear it. Arthur, come, my child. Take her hand in yours and kiss her on the forehead, and only once.
Their eyes met instead of their lips, and so they parted. Lucy's eyes closed, and Van Helsing, who had been watching closely, took Arthur's arm and drew him away. And then Lucy's breathing became stertorous again. And all at once, it ceased.
It is all over. She is dead.
I took Arthur by the arm and led him away to the drawing room, where he sat down and covered his face with his hands, sobbing in a way that nearly broke me down to see. I went back to the room and found Van Helsing looking at poor Lucy, and his face was sterner than ever. Some change had come over her body. Death had given back part of her beauty, for her brow and cheeks had recovered some of their flowing lines. Even the lips had lost their deadly pallor. It was as if the blood, no longer needed for the working of the heart, had gone to make the harshness of death as little rude as might be.
We thought her dying whilst she slept, and sleeping when she died.
There is peace for her at last. It is the end.
Not so, alas, not so. It is only the beginning.
When I asked him what he meant, he only shook his head and answered,
"We can do nothing as yet. Wait and see."